is Susan Robb for Teachers for a New Era. I'm talking with Roy Friedman. We're talking about a lot of different books and things that he's worked on. Among them, Corduroy, which is one of the beloved books in children's literature, and something that is it's a classic. And so Roy has done a website that is about his father, which is www.donfriedman.info. And so Roy, tell me first, just because people know Corduroy so much, what do you think it is that makes or that people connected to in that? Because we'd all like the answer to what makes a classic. We probably can't do that one. But what is it, do you think, about that has a universal appeal?
I think Corduroy has got a wonderful story, and it's fun. It's also one of the first books at that time published with an Afro-American heroine, which was a big theme in the back of my father, but I'm sure he never noticed. He never made any difference to him who was who in his books, right? So I think that has a universal appeal. And for me personally, underneath the story of a bear in a department store is the fact that the bear is actually lost and no one takes him. He's got no home, and he's got a missing a button, until some young girl actually finds him and decides to take him home in spite of his imperfections. And I'm often reminded of the fact that my father, who lost his mother when he was very young, and his father gave Don and my uncle, Don's brother, over to a guardian, a very strict and I think a little bit of a crazy woman. And Don had to grow up without ever knowing really his mother, and with having his father visit him every couple of weeks when he was lucky, that the whole theme of abandonment and being totally disjointed in another environment than let's say a normal family was something very deep for my father, that in his lifetime he never spoke about. Well, this is a theme that I picked up. I don't know whether it's true for him, but I sense it is true. And so I think that the story of Corduroy actually has a lot of deep meaning for my father. And I think today there's a lot of children, there's a lot of boys who don't have contact with their father, who've lost their parents, or are misunderstood as who they are. And the real basic question is, do I have value who I am, even if I'm not perfect or make trouble, and actually am able to find a friend or find some kind of connection to love or having a friendship? I think that's a deep theme. And for me, Corduroy hits this pretty directly.
It's amazing when you see something, endure like that, just intergenerationally. There are a lot of connections that can happen when a book endures like that.
I have the fortune of, through the website, of getting emails from, for instance, from grandmothers who had Corduroy read to them as children, and it was one of their favorite children's books, and then they read it to their children, their daughters, and now their daughters have daughters, and the grandmothers read Corduroy to their grandchildren. And it's exceedingly touching to see that this story lives. And I'm sure that Don would never have expected that Corduroy to have such a life over generations. And then, of course, this fact that people communicate that to me, the son of Don, is a wonderful circle that keeps the whole story alive for me and touches me very deeply.
And I think people do have that kind of desire with authors in different ways, or illustrators wanting to connect. But also, you've talked about doing books that your father had started but not finished publishing. What was the prompt for that?
Well, that's a great story in my life because I had a difficult relationship with my father, and to be able to work on things that he didn't finish 30 years after he died is really like healing my relationship with him. And it has a little bit to do with the Bologna Children's Fair, because some of these books were in a way rediscovered here, brought to the publisher and opened up here. And it also has become recently quite a creative challenge to me. For instance, there's a second book about a squirrel, in color this time, not like in black and white, to Earl the Squirrel. And my father had only written a part of the beginning of the story with beautiful illustrations. And one of the reasons that I picked this up is that because I appreciate my father's work, I appreciate what he, through the years, has given me, actually, in terms of, it has good and bad sides, being the creative genes and the drive to try to do something meaningful with your life. And when I see what a wonderful story this could be, then I want to pick it up. Actually, it becomes a creative task for me. So with that story, it's now called One More Acorn, I wrote about 75% of the text. The whole end of the story is due to me, and I hope my father likes what I did to it. I'm pretty sure he likes it. That story is being, the illustrations are being done relatively, I hope we can keep my father's style, or I insist that they keep my father's style. They're being done by a very talented artist called Jody Wheeler. And then recently, just this March, I brought another book that I had found, the dummy of a book, another book in color by my father that he also laid aside because he couldn't find the proper ending or the proper storyline. But it's a wonderful book about a cat looking through windows. And once again, I feel that there was a spirit in my father that he put into the book, and they're wonderful illustrations. And he always has a wonderful text line. He was great with words, with punning and stories. Of the cat purred in perfect French because she's a cat in Paris. So it's also for me a wonderful way to reconnect to my father. And then I have the challenge of being true to myself in that the story has also to fit and work for me. And the illustrations, which were only partially finished this time, I would like to try to actually make a very creative combination. I'm not quite sure how I'm going to do it, or how we're going to do it with me and my father's spirit, but I look very much forward to putting this together and reliving the challenge that he had of making a story work. And that was very much a part of his life. And through the years, I've had to face that that's also a part of my life, which I like the same thing. I just have different stories and different artwork, and we're going to have fun seeing what I can what I can bring out of this.
You think that sometimes when you talk to authors or illustrators, they talk about knowing characters in a particular way. So is there a process, do you think, for you to get to know these characters so they become kind of yours too?
I think for every author, speaking for myself and for how I grew up with my father, that the characters in the story become alive. You speak to the characters, they start writing the story. I mean, the cat says, no, I want it this way. That's true. So that has to happen. It's already happened. Last night I retyped the text from one of the versions up, and it begins to work. I think for an author or an illustrator to get in any way near to story, it has to come alive. The pictures have to come alive, the story has to come alive, and at that point then the characters start determining where it goes, and they say, no, that's not right, you have to write it this way, or no, I'm not going to do that, or you're not going to paint me a picture when I'm jumping like this. I think that's very true. That it doesn't work unless the story works and it comes alive. So it's now coming alive for me.
So do you think that kind of connection with the character, because people do talk about that a lot, and you know that they you know, they know things about the character that they never share with the audience, but things evolve. What is it that allows you to tap into that kind of thing, and how do you know if you've connected with it? Because it seems like it's an unconscious thing. It comes from something that seems alive.
Well, as I said, told you before that my salaried position is working with adults on the autistic spectrum, and I also spent many years of my life learning the messages that rocks and geology teach us. So for me to try to make contact with something that is on face value not communicative, but to find out what is the language that it's speaking is also something that's deep inside my vein. So when I look at a book, for instance, this book about Kataiva, it starts to work, and then it's actually a creative process that happens, because, I mean, let's say Kataiva, or standing for any character in the book, can start to determine how it wants the story. But on the other hand, I'm also there. I've got to say, no, wait a minute, I don't think we can go this way. So it's actually a dialogue. It's a pretty intense dialogue. And of course, someplace it's about the cat inside of me that's going on. So there's a lot of communication going on at different levels. So in the end, I'm not going to do everything the characters want just because they're totally like directing the whole story, right? I can say, no, wait a minute, the page ends here. I'm sorry, I've only got one of the classic boundary situations where the author is that, oh, it's got to be 30 pages. That's what the publisher says. It has to be 32 pages, and well, the first two pages we need for the title, the text information, right, copyright stuff. So you've only got 30 pages, so please write the story that fits in 30 pages. Now, no cat wants to be confined to 30 pages with their whole life story in there, right? So immediately it's a battle between going through worlds within a very set boundary situation, right? That's the challenge. And to say yes to doing the book, I have to say yes to that challenge. On top of that, then it's between me and my father, and between the artwork and myself, and between what I can draw and what looks good. I mean, it's going to be quite a challenge. I can say that, right? But of course, that makes the fun out of it, I think.
So I think actually, you know, some number of us were under the misperception that this had to do with printing and paper costs, but really it's maybe to have publishers so that they have a hope of the story getting finished at some point with all these characters in play. Let me ask you with this, I mean, do you have characters or do you have directions that you know you want to go on with your own work? I mean, are there characters that kind of come alive that you table for the moment and have plans for?
I have a lot of plans and a lot of characters, and the trouble is none of them fit into any category. They're neither just for children or just for adults. The illustrations are neither for just a black and white book or a full color book. So I have a lot of challenges, and I just had a talk to another artist here, Doug Cushman at Bologna, and he gave me a lot of great hints about being more simple, bringing everything down, and I think that's the main challenge that I've got, is to bring all of the ideas that I have, or let's say one idea that I have, down to a simple story. And the lesson that I got out of the conversation today was that I think adults too like simple and deep stories, so that if it's good for children, it's going to be good for adults. So I'm struggling to find my way through there, but I have a lot of ideas that I would definitely going to pick up, and maybe one day they'll find a way into book size or book form. I hope.
So we'll look for that, and so tell us just the things that are coming along next, the stories about Earl, and what else, anything else that we should look for?
Definitely the second story on Earl, which is called One More Acorn, is going to be published in fall of 2010. And the second story that we're working about, the cat, I called Kataiva, that's probably, well, let's hope it's 2011, that'll be coming out then, right? And I'll be happy if we get that far. And there's actually three more books of my father that are not published. And one of them I think is really great, so it's called Sparrows of Stonehenge. So I've got my work cut out for me.
Sounds great. Well, we'll look forward to that, and the publisher will probably be calling tomorrow to find out what else is in that cabinet.
Yeah, I've just been very fortunate to have a publisher who, over the years, is now very open to doing works by my father, in spite of the fact that he's died 30 years ago. 5 years ago, this was not so true. They were very reluctant, or they were not quite sure, but the fact that there's been, in the last couple years, more or less successful reproductions, and the fact that I think these ideas are catching on, that I'm very grateful for the fact that the publisher is now opening up to that, so that the support goes two ways. I mean, that I look forward to doing it, and I have the feeling they also are now very open to this kind of situation, right? So I'm glad.
No, it is. It's really good. Well, we'll look forward to that, and thanks, Roy, for talking with me.
Okay, thank you very much, Susan.